not here yet.
Yep. Hi, everybody. My name's Larry. I'm an alcoholic.
Larry.
And I'd like to thank you for inviting me out to be here. And it's good to be with you, and happy birthday to the birthday guys. And I want to welcome all the new people and let you know that my sponsor tells me that I'm living proof that a man can stay sober for, 42 years. And and not amount to a damn thing. So I have a feeling I'm in the right place. So I'm glad to be with you. And I want to thank my my friends for riding up with me and everything. And it's always good to be in a meeting of alcoholics. And I don't care what kind of day I had, there's nothing more safer. Something happens to me when I'm with you. Undeniable. Something happens. And it's been happening for years. And I'm so glad that it still does. If you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I know there's some things about you. There's some things about you that you've been toting around for years. And one of your regrets is that you can't forget the past. It keeps hounding you and hounding you and hounding you. And I'm here to share with you that I hope that you stay long enough to hear somebody tell a little corner of your story where you can start getting together with somebody and letting out some of those secrets that drove you to torture, you know, and find the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous, the main ingredient of Alcoholics Anonymous, one alcoholic talking to another. Identification. That's the thing that separates this meeting from any other room you're going to sit in. It's not all the drunken stories and how many early times. It's that alcoholic torture that strikes us when everything in us wants to finally stop and we can't. And yet, there's nothing to keep us from doing it again. And I'm here to share with you, if you're new, I hope you find that person that you can eventually start unloading on. And I'm here to share with you that no matter what those secrets are and no matter how hideous, you will not shock the people in AA. If it hasn't been done by the folks in this first table, it just hasn't been thought of yet. You know what I mean? If you want to shock us, help us set up the meetings. You know, that'll get our attention. I like I said, I'm a loser. I come from great people. Mom and Dad aren't the reason why I'm a drunk. You know, I had fabulous folks. I was born in Detroit, come out to California when I was about, 6 years old. And mom and dad had some problems early on in the marriage, and they got a separation, then a divorce, and they put me in an orphanage and in a little convent and all that. And they got together again after about 3 years and got married, and they said, oh, I think we forgot something. So they came out to Detroit and brought me in, and they were great people, hard-working people from back there. And my mom was a little Scandinavian lady, and she loved diet pills, so she was always cleaning, and just a busy lady, you know. Sorting out nuts and bolts in the garage at midnight, you know, and raking the neighbor's yard around 4 in the morning, you know, and no matter what time you got up, Betty was doing something, you know. And I loved her to death, man. And as some of you know, one of her favorite hobbies was to eat that speed and, you know, make Afghans. So, you know, every week there was new Afghans on chairs, and couches had Afghans, chairs had Afghans. My dad's golf clubs had little, you know, poodles that she knit and stuck on there, you know, and everything was tight and pink like her, you know, and just a busy lady. And as some of you guys know and gals, that, you know, if you eat a lot of speed, you have a lot of hobbies, am I right? Look at that whole table. You bet, man. And you like to do them all at once, You know what I mean? You're painting, you're mowing your lawn, you're picking your face for sure, And her favorite hobby, man, was to eat that speed and make these huge jigsaw puzzles, right? Not the little 2,000 piecers or the 3,000 piece, but the 1 million piecers of the Mojave Desert, you know what I mean? This would capture, oh, it's going to be a beige night tonight, and she'll set up her little card table, or sit behind the breakfast nook and get ready for a 4 or 5 day run and trying to put this puzzle together, and oh, man, she would, get her peroxide all on and, she would go down to the drugstore and get her prescription filled. And she used to smoke those Raleigh cigarettes. So on the back of each pack of cigarettes was a coupon. And they had a little coupon book. And if you save enough coupons, you can buy stuff. And she would buy more yarn. It was a hideous cycle she was caught up in, And she'd come home with all this stuff, and she'd get her hair all peroxided up, put her one and only muumuu on she had for 50 years, That thing was wearing thin, man. Get away from the front window, Mom. The postmen are out there, And she would squeeze in that little breakfast nook and start putting together this damn puzzle day after day. No getting up, right? And my golly, if she found a piece that didn't fit, well, she had a big pair of toenail clippers, and she'd just snip that son of a bitch down and wedge it right in there, There's no stopping Betty here, We got a job to do. And, I fell in love with my mom. I loved being with my mom. And I tell you what, I never want to forget what it was like to be 30 years old and coming back to Alcoholics Anonymous. Which I hope and pray is my last time. And looking back at what I did to that little... My mom looked like Kim Novak. She was a beautiful little lady. She had a lot of friends, and she was very sociable, and everybody loved hanging around Betty. And by the time I was 30 years old, Betty wasn't sociable, and Betty didn't have a lot of folks over. Betty was frozen in front of the kitchen window day in and day night, smoking those Raleigh cigarettes, wondering if that's her son getting out of the cop car, coming home. Is he finally coming home? Is that the daily breeze that's sliding under the door? Is that got my son obituary? Staying there at night, still smoking. Is that my son walking down the street? Is he finally coming home? Whittled her down to a 95-pound nervous wreck. But you see, my drinking ain't bothering anybody. Never want to forget that. Never want to forget that. Never want to forget what it's like to be 17 years old and be put away for a small period of time. And on a Monday morning, that jail bus lets us off, and we're supposed to go to the South Bay Courthouse, and we all get off the bus. It's a Monday morning, about 8 o'clock in the morning. The guys get off, and they head that way, and I head that way, and I go to Gardena. Now, that was a Monday. On Thursday morning, it's raining out. It's about 8 o'clock in the morning, and I'm standing in a parking lot of a dry cleaner's where my mom works. She cleans people's houses, and she works at a dry cleaner's, and I make fun of her, and I'm ashamed of her. And I'm about from here to that back door, and I've got my filth on. I've got my disgust on. I've got my needle marks, my wine sores, and bare feet and disgust, what Wino Joe used to call the habiliments of despair. And that rain's hitting me, and I'm hiding behind a parked car waiting for that last customer to come out. And that customer comes waddling out of there. And I start walking through that rain, man, like it was yesterday. And I can see that my dirty feet splashing up that water, and I got one thought. She better have a buck. And I open up that dry cleaner's door, and that brass bell hits that window, and my mom turns around and makes that oh-so-familiar sound. Oh, my God, where you been? She runs to her wallet, peels out $1, $2, $3, and I run right by her, and I grab that money, and I run off to Wilmington, where I'm going to die. Now, the thing that brings it home to me tonight with my new friends is you take this same man, new in Alcoholics Anonymous. With my so-called desperation, and I need to ask you new guys something. How come when my life depends on it, if you were to put the secretary of this meeting that same distance as my mom and me in that dry cleaner's parking lot, how come I can't walk that same distance and ask this young lady for a job at a meeting that's going to save my life? But I can walk that distance and use my mom and folks like her time and time and time again. And I'm here to share with you, if you're new, that if my alcoholism doesn't kill me, my selfishness and my self-centeredness will, make no mistake about that. Make no mistake about that. And if I can get together with the folks in this room and that book and find out that thing that keeps me from serving you, I will have found a key to life. Something happens to the selfish when they begin to be unselfish. And if I can crack that book and find that miracle that I found with you, you see, I will never get so sober that I can't get drunk again. But I can get so drunk that I can't make it back. And I never want to forget what it used to be like and what happened and what can still happen today. Now, my dad was a happy drunk. My dad was a happy singing the blues, Nat King Cole, Bobby Darin drunk. The old boy loved to get drunk and sneak into his own home. It was an amazing thing. He was a refinery worker, so he was always coming home at different hours, you know. And he snuck into my room one night, and that big old refinery boot came down on my chest, you know. And I grabbed that boot, and I said, "Hey, Pop," I said, "why don't you have Mom make you a set of keys, you know? I hear the Hoover going now. I believe she's up, you know. I believe the old girl can make them with her teeth by now, you know, grind you one out, you know what I mean?" And I tell you, man, I love being around my dad, love being around Pop. But I had so much guilt and so much being uncomfortable because I couldn't stand the fact that I didn't trust these people that I loved because of the things that I'd been hearing and watching being done and stuff like that. I just couldn't put it together. I didn't know what was going on there. And so I started running away from home, you know. At about 11 years old, there was four of us in a garage, and we started passing around a bottle of Four Rose whiskey. My little buddy Louis Sanchez brought it over, and, I never threw up so much my entire life, you know. I was throwing up Gerbers. I mean, this was some old stuff coming out, man, you know. And that lasted for a couple hours, but you know how you keep at it, you know. You've got the guys watching you and stuff. And finally, we, you know, was able to keep it down. And, you know, I remember, you know, laughing so hard and with all those guys and stuff. And that night at 11 years old, I kissed my first Latin woman. It was my aunt. I counted it, And had the time of my life. Me and Louie were walking home and falling in the bushes and yelling and screaming and stuff, and snuck into the house. You know, my dad wasn't home from work, so I got into my house and fell back on the bed, and the bed starts turning around like a flying saucer. And I woke up the next day, and I thought, oh, man, Papa's going to set me on fire today. He damn near chopped my arms off for smoking, you know. He's going to let me have it this time. And he wasn't around, so I thought I could go into his little room where he had a bar. My dad made himself a bar, you know. It wasn't a bar where you can line up 20 guys, you know what I mean? It was an alky bar. It fit one guy, you know what I mean? The jar of pickled pig feet right there, and little radio right there, you know. And I thought I could sneak in there and get a shot of his Thunderbird, but he had a lock on that thing about the size of a big book, you know. And but I started thinking about that last night. I started thinking about that night before. I was fascinated by it. You see, I've always known I was a nobody. I never had to prove that to anybody. That was something I knew way in here. And I would always be a nobody. But something happened besides a kid getting drunk that night. Something happened with those guys where for the first time in my life, this nobody felt like somebody. Whether it be for 8 or 9 hours, it was the realest thing that I've ever had. And I didn't have to pay for it. I didn't have to study for it. I didn't have to do anything but take a shot of some Four Rose whiskey, PM bourbon bottle, whatever, you know. And I become preoccupied with doing it again. Now, you know, 11 years old, I didn't start heading out to Skid Row the next day and lose my paper out and come to the Alano Club, you know. I'm ready, you know. But I become preoccupied with doing it again. And we began doing it again. And by the time I got to high school, I was a freshman in high school, and I started dating this little Mexican girl, and she had some brothers, and they liked cars, and I love cars to this day. And we didn't have these Dodge trucks like you guys have where the tires are this big and you ride over each other's houses on the weekend and stuff, you know what I mean? But I did have a nice 62 Chevy Impala dropped right down to the ground, and had my hair all shiny and pulled back, and white T-shirts with black khaki pants that came up to here, you know. And I had a little girlfriend named Loopy, and she used to curl her hair with soup cans, and the noodles were stuck in there, you know. And we would drink that little Four Rose whiskey and drive around and listen to the Four Tops and the Temptations and the OJs and Marvin Gaye. God, I loved it, man. It wasn't too long ago I was in my plumbing truck and the Four Tops came on, and shit, I just started sinking in my damn truck, man. It's not that far aloft, man. You know, we loved it. Her girlfriends were telling me that men who were well endowed had big feet, so I went out and bought me a pair of 15-inch shoes, you know, and the leader tripped over my foot tonight. And you want me to move that? You know? And I loved it, you know. And in my own mind, bouncing around out there with Loopy, I became somebody. I wasn't that kid next door. I wasn't that loser down the street. In my own mind, I was Lawrence of Torrance, you know. Nobody else knew it, but I knew it, and that's all it took, you know. And me and Louie and Ernie and Loopy, we would bounce around forever, man. I loved it. I loved it. Around 1969, folks are going different places, and I don't know where I'm going to go. A lot of them are going to San Francisco and all different places. So I got a hold of my dope dealer, and I said, let's go. I want to go show you my roots, you know. So we bounced off to Detroit looking for my roots. We wound up in Phoenix, North Central and Roosevelt, you know, at the Apache Hotel. 5 floors up. Everybody has a bathroom. It's down the hall. Everybody has a TV. It's in the lobby. It's about $11 or $12 a night. I'm running low on dough. I'm afraid to leave the place in the morning. I'm afraid to be by myself at night. So I go down a couple blocks and I find this watering hole called the Wagon Wheel Bar. Beautiful bar. You guys would love it. There's no windows. Yeah, just a dirty red curtain blowing through the window, the doorway there, you know. And went in there and I met a guy named Ernie. Every bar has an Ernie. Ernie's the answer. We probably got a couple Ernies in here tonight. You know what I mean? Every bar has, I don't care what the problem is, Ernie's got the answer, you know? And it's usually in his trunk, you know? And, Ernie had an answer for me. He says, well, jackass, you're going to need a job, you know? And I've never done anything but, you know, bounced around in a car, and, you know, and he said, well, come by in the morning. I got a guy that may need you. So I came by in the morning, and he introduces me to a plumber. Well, I've never plumbed a thing in my life, you know. The closest thing to plumbing I've ever done is throw up in a toilet. That's about it. That's done, you know what I mean? And he introduces me to this plumber, and he seems to think that I'm pretty capable of doing the job, and, you know, puts me in the truck, and they drive me off to Tempe, Arizona, and they stick me underneath the house. Now, if there's one thing at this time in my life that I love, is being in your home. I love being in straight, and the things in there. I'm just fat. I could be in your attic, underneath it. You're in front of your medicine chest, just staring. You know what I mean? I loved it, and so he took me out to Tempe. I had a transistor radio. He says, "All I want you to do, hotshot, is hang copper. That's all I want you to do. I'll come back in about 8 hours, and we'll see how you're doing." And so he takes off. Well, I'm underneath this house, and it's all new to me under there, and I'm excited because you never know what you're going to find under there, you know. And, man, I'm kind of excited, and I start crying. I wasn't crawling around for more than 10 minutes, and I discovered it. Over there in the corner, oh, my God, this is unbelievable. And it was a cat, beautiful little cat, you know, and I thought, I almost cried. I said, this is unbelievable, man. I've got a transistor. I've got a pint. I got a cat, you know. I got my own pet now, you know, and I'm going, things are working out pretty good. You know? This would be the closest to normal living I would have till I meet you guys, you know what I mean? And so I started drinking that stuff and hanging copper, and I popped up through the lady's floor, and I robbed her of some of her jewelry, and she kept drinking and popping up through the floor again, and, you know, and finally after about 8 hours, the boss rolled in, and, you know, and I'm passed out. And he drags me out from underneath that house, and this cat comes running out with a bunch of necklaces on, you know. He puts me in jail for about 6 months over there in southern Arizona. I get out of there, and I go back to the wagon wheel, and Ernie says, all right. He says, this is what we're going to do, hotshot. Not too far from here is a horse track. He says, we're going to get you down to 95 pounds. You're going to be a jockey. And I thought, oh, man, this is great. We're going to work out and stuff. He says, well, I don't know about that. He says, but I want you to take this stuff. I'm going to leave it with you for 2 months, and I'll come back. And I have a feeling you'll be down to 95 pounds, you know. And he leaves me in my little room. Now, I don't know what it is, but he comes back 2 weeks, not 2 months. He comes back 2 weeks, opens up the door, and I'm standing. He goes, oh, my God, you couldn't have possibly taken all that. Well, I did, Ernie. You can put a saddle on me and ride my ass around, you know. I had never taken speed before. I've just been drinking cheap wine and whiskey and doing heroin, minding my own business, you know what I mean? Man, I took this stuff and closed myself in that little room, man, and Jesus, I was chasing a fly around my room, you know, and it wasn't a big room, you know what I mean? And looking out my window every 10 seconds, what's that? What's that? What's that? What's that? You know? Or most of the time, I'm underneath my bed, frightened to death, because of these torturous black and white flashes and music that's going on. And it was the sun coming up and down, you know what I mean? And I'm like, God, you know. He says, you couldn't have, well, I did, Ernie, you know. And so he introduced me to another guy, and he introduces me to this other plumber, and I start working for this other plumber for about, I don't know, 2 hours, you know, and I found out that he was younger than me, and I ain't working for no kid. You know, I got my pride. So I did what any good, hard-earned plumber would do. I faked a knee injury, and they took me to a fake doctor, and he wrote me a fake prescription for Percodan, and then paid him and all that, and he left the room, and he left a cardboard box full of blank prescription pads he wanted me to have, you know. So I, boy, ran down North Central with a box of blank prescription pads and ran into the bar, and Ernie sees that, and he goes, oh, my God, this is great. This is great. And so he makes a phone call to some guy in Yuma, Arizona, and we go riding down there, and, you know, we get a PDR book, and we start writing and selling prescriptions for everything, man. I mean, Seconal, Nembutal, Tylenol, you name it all. We wrote it all, you know. And damn near took it all, too, you know what I mean? And after about 9 months, they caught up with me. Now, when you're loaded on barbiturates and whiskey, there's no freeway chase on Channel 7, you know. Well, look at them go. You know, none of that's happening. I was on foot. You know, the cop was on foot, and he was just walking by the car. Hey, come on, roll down that window, man. And I'm looking at that cop going, my God, can that man run? You know what I mean? He keeps rolling, pounding on that window, you know, and they finally pulled me over, put me in jail for about a year, and we get out of there, and they send me back to Los Angeles. And about 1974, they send me to Los Angeles and at the L.A. courthouse, and they give me a voucher for a board and care house where it's just a hallway, and there's about five little rooms on each side, and each room is big enough for a little bed and a chair, and then there's a little window about the size of that in each little room. And he puts me in there, and then he puts me on Anabuse. No talk of AA, no talk of anything, but take this Anabuse. And I'm in my, and at this time in my life, people are saying stuff like, what are you going to do when you grow up? You know, I mean, what do you want to do with your life? You're wasting your life away. Your institutions and running around. What are you going to do? I mean, don't you have any dreams? Don't you have any? I tell you what, about once a week, I would look out that little window, and I would look across the street at the Roy Tan Hotel at the downtown Torrance, and they had a little sign on there that said, boarding rooms for rent with hot plates. And I thought, man, one of these days, one of these days, man, I'm going to get me one of those. You bet. I'm going to give it everything I had. And after about 120 days on the Anabuse, I hadn't drank or anything, I get a voucher from my probation officer to go for a job interview, and it was in a city called El Segundo, and he wants me to be a part-time janitor at midnight at a refinery. And, you know, I'm not driving, I won't be driving until I'm 32, so, you know, you take buses, and, you know, everything's 3 to 4 hours. There's none of this, I'll be right there, you know what I mean? And so sure enough, I showed up over there in El Segundo about 4 hours before my interview, and I'm walking around this little city that looks like Mayberry, you know, and I finally walk into someplace familiar. It looked like a park where there's a baseball diamond and dugout. And I go into that dugout, and man, like lightning, I start thinking about mom and dad. Start thinking about me and that old man playing baseball catch. How he really used to love to grab my hand and show me how to make that curve. You know? Thought about that. Thought about how he took the time to catch the ball in the driveway and stuff like that. And I thought about mom, and I started crying, and then I started laughing. And this went on for hours, and I couldn't figure out what was going on with me. I hadn't been locked up in a mental place for a while. And then that paranoia and the hallucinations that come when we're DTing, they wrap around me. I hadn't had a shot for about over 100 days. I've been clean on that Anabuse. And this paranoia and these hallucinations hook me, and I start walking that baseball field, you know, wondering what's going on here. Somebody sees me wandering around, and they call the paramedics, and they take me to the Harvard General Hospital in Torrance, California. I'm on a gurney with an arm and a leg strapped down, and this little doctor comes to my side, and he says, son, it seems to me that you're having some troubles here, and we need to find out what's going on with you, kid. He says, so we're going to put you in a mental facility for about 2 or 3 months and observe you. So they took me to the place where they observe people, and a year later I got out of there. And it totally observed, you know. And in 1975, they turned me loose, and my job now is to walk from Long Beach to downtown Los Angeles, from one jungle to the next. There's no job hunting. I'm just trying to stay on Broadway and Alameda and stuff, and that's what I do. And at this time in my life, there is no invisible line of what a person does or doesn't do. You just go. You just walk. You talk to no one. In 1975, they find me in Overo Street, across the street at the Chevron gas station. I'm on a pile of tires and I'm drunk. And the cops pull up and they arrest me for public intoxication, violation of probation, out-of-state forgeries. And they sentence me to 3 years. And they put me in a little bus and take me down to downtown Los Angeles, and off to Wayside I go. After about a month, they put about 40 of us in a black and white bus and send us back to the South Bay Courthouse in Torrance, California. I'm in a holding tank about this size. Everybody's chained together. And one by one, the judge is calling these guys out, and they're being taken, and they're not coming back. At 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm the only one left. I'm on a concrete floor with a Vons bag and no hope, wondering where they're going to send me now, because they're sending us somewhere all the time. At 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I hear a sound that is like an orchestra to a lot of people in here. And it's the sound of jailer keys coming down the hall. And I hear those keys. And the deputy rolls open the door. And there's a Scottish man with a patch standing there, just as clean and shiny as you folks are right now. And he's standing there with that patch and that grin that you could see every stick of ivory in there. Hi, lad. He says, my name is Alex. Are you Larry Thomas? And I said, yes, sir. He said, ah, that's great. Come with me, son. We're going to AA. AA? I said to myself, what's AA? You know, I've heard of OR and PO, but what's AA? And who's this Scottish pirate all of a sudden, you know? Where's your parrot, you know? And looking back well over 50 years, I know exactly what he is. Because this room is filled with them. Sprinkled with them. It's what our book calls a trusted servant. And what made that man a trusted servant was simply this. He wasn't part of H&I. He wasn't part of hospitals or, you know, counselor. He was a refinery worker who just got the worst news of his life, and his wife had just passed. And he was heading off from Torrance to Palm Springs to be with his buddies. He got about a mile, 2 miles out. And the thought came to him. Practical experience tells us Nothing will ensure immunity from drinking but intensive work with other alcoholics. This works. Man, he turned that car around and he drove to the South Bay Courthouse. He talked to Judge Foy and Judge Hollingsworth and they said, I think we got a guy for you. And that man took me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1975. And man, I was ready for a long ride and maybe some lunch or something, right? He takes me to a 15-minute car ride to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. He rolls up to this stinky, dirty, filthy, disgusting Torrance Lamita Alano Club. And I thought, man, what is an Alano? What a weird word, you know? Is that like an elk or a moose, you know? Watch for crossing Alanos, you know? I mean, what the hell is that, you know? And he starts introducing me to all these Alanos. Everybody has a nickname and a tattoo. Indian Genie, Captain Bob, Tennessee Bill, Singing Sam, Serenity Sam, Bicycle Ray, Santa Claus Ray, Dancing Pete, Whistling Butt, you know what I'm saying? I just left a bunch of people like this, right? Moose was 120 years old. She comes running after me, and she says, hi, honey. She says, my name is Moose, and I'm expecting a miracle. I said, I bet you are. I said, it ain't me. You know what I mean? And then a big transvestite starts circling me like a helicopter in Long Beach, you know, and he finally comes up to me with his new muumuu on. He says, hi. He says, I can't wait to take you to a candlelight meeting. I said, I don't think so, big guy. I says, not till I get my year, you know. And I said, my God, that guy had big feet, you know. And I said, unbelievable, right? Well, I tell you what. From 1975 to 1982, I visited your rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous on a regular basis, never once staying sober. I did what I've always done. I sat in a room waiting for you to do something for me. And then I would say that god-awful statement, AA don't work. AA don't work for me. Oh yeah, I tried it. AA don't work for me. Well, guess what, champ? It don't work for anybody. We work for it. And you better wrap your head around that, pal. The day for, something for nothing guy, there's no room here. And most people die sitting in Alcoholics Anonymous thinking because just they stop drinking, everything's all right. And yet they do nothing for the thing they want so much from. Everybody would like a little something from AA. Give me a little job. Give me a little break. Little piece. But what are you willing to do for it? Are you ready to be divinely inconvenienced for the rest of your damn life? You know what I mean? Because that's what happens here. It ain't about getting comfortable and getting cozy and stuff. It's about doing the uncomfortable to get comfortable. And that's what these steps have done. Our whole purpose is to carry this message. That's what we're sober for. Not for the cars and the little babies and the beautiful stuff. My primary purpose is to be here with you. To have a routine of meetings. I love my routine of meetings. I got my 3 or 4 meetings that I go to, and I live by my routine. I start my day off with my morning reading and my phone calls to my sponsor and stuff like that. And I don't leave home without it. And the meetings that I go to are my home group because I have little jobs in them. I'm a little coffee maker and stuff like that in most of them. And I hear the music of Alcoholics Anonymous when I'm with you. And every time I called Alcoholics Anonymous when I was sliding around, people from Alcoholics Anonymous would come and get me. Central office, and they were always clean and they were sharp. And most of the time it was this little Montana cowboy. Where he at? And he'd come and get me. On May 2nd, 1982, I was getting kicked out of the Beacon Light Mission in Wilmington. They kick you out at 5, and then if you're all right, they'll bring you back in at 6 in the afternoon if they have any beds. And I'm in an alley, and I've got this little rug or something tied around me, a blanket. And the thought came to me that I came to believe. Not I didn't come to believe in God or the big book or... I came to believe in the hopelessness and the futility of me running my life any longer. That at the ripe old age of 30 years old, the best I could do would be wrapped up shivering like an old salmon, wondering what I'm going to do. Gave it my best shot. And I panhandled some money, and I went by a Woolworth window, and I made that god-awful mistake of seeing my reflection in the mirror. I've been trying to dodge that for years, and it frightened me. So I called central office, and who do I get? I get Don. Hey, Don, this is Larry. I'm ready to come back to AA. Will you come and get me? And he told me the most profound thing I've ever heard in my life. He said, no. You know where we are. You know what we got. He says, why don't you get your rusty ass down here yourself? I'm tired of chasing after you. And he hung up, and I said, my God, whatever happened to that AA love, you know? And then I got fired up. Look at cowboy, you don't hang up on me. You do not hang up on me. And man, you know what? I may be in Wilmington and he's in Torrance at that clubhouse. That's 10 miles. I'm going to walk over there and wait for that guy and tell him what I feel about that yelling at me and not picking me up. And so I started walking to Torrance, and it took me 2 weeks. You know, I took the long route, but I finally got there with my poopy pants and no hope, and broke down into DTs, and Frank and Lucille were walking me around. They didn't take me to a recovery home or anything. They gave me honey and orange juice. Kept me walking. Then they started giving me buttermilk. I don't know whose idea that was. They kept me walking, and I would flop out, and they would hem and hug me and stuff. And finally, at about 1 o'clock, Don finally showed up. And he showed up in his little El Camino, and he was over there by the doorway like that guy is now. And he says, I hear you want to talk to me. I says, you bet. And I had my little walked over there. He says, what do you got? And I said, I don't know what to do with my life. Would you be my sponsor? And he looked up for about 5 seconds like a chandelier. And then for about 20 minutes, he lit into me and told me, gave me the wood. You make the effort, I'll make the effort. If you don't make the effort, lose my number, Larry. I got guys that want to stay sober. And I fell in love with you. I didn't like everything you guys told me to do, but I lost the power of choice in the matter. And I started doing those little things that I used to make fun of people doing and started doing them. And this guy that never believed since he was 5 years old, one of the things they used to tell me when I'd go to, don't worry about the God thing. Don't worry about that now. No. Just do what we're doing. Well, finally, you need to do something about it. But I didn't know what I could do to identify with it, you know. And then I thought about you. And I thought about what Chuck said. God is people. It's the God in me that sees the God in you. And he says, you've been playing in the evidence. And if you're new, you're playing in the evidence now. Look around you. You got row after row after row of people who should be locked up, dead, or insane. And look at us tonight. We're happy, we're joyous, we're free. We've got new people in our lives. I don't ever have to try to find them. I'm playing in the evidence. And I began to use that very spirit of Alcoholics Anonymous as my little God that I can pray to, because it was tangible. Because it works, and I can see you. And I always want to see you. Thanks.